Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. We call this the emergency show number one, which will next week be followed by the emergency show number two. We got caught. I got caught.
I'm not going down with your sinking ship.
Thank you very much. I had an influx of pre-medical students come in this week. We are going pretty much 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. working with the students. I have done the research. There are some interesting topics, but I did not go further and name the show. So that's why it is the emergency show number one. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio with us to make up for my lack of preparation, that's what I'm doing right now. Assistant professor from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Program, Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And also back from assignment on Isonville, I might add. And also from the University of Kentucky, the interim executive director of networking and infrastructure, Rick Phillips, to tell you about how to access Health Matters on the web. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony, and I'm not sure why you'd want to interact with Health Matters on the Internet, but if you do, the audio of the show would be at WMKY.org. That's right. That's the audio. And actually, that's the site that has all the great, great shows from the last, what, say 3 months up there, and you can certainly go listen to them, have a good time, enjoy them. After that, jump over to Facebook, facebook.com/HMRadioShow. There you will find a fan page devoted to Health Matters. This is full of useless things. And we encourage you to go to this site and participate in Health Matters.
Yeah, let me tell you about this site. That right now I am having a race with Rick. I am a little bit behind but catching up. Rick posted a Facebook article on how swearing would help you to reach new intensity of exercise.
And right? Be more intelligent.
Okay. And I posted one on how to stop bleeding when you did something stupid.
That was gross.
And we'll have more about bleeding in this segment and this show. But just to let you know, these are the kind of articles we put up there. How do you stop the bleeding when you do something stupid? Why would you want to swear when you're lifting weights to improve your weight totals and your athletic performance? These are things that interest probably nobody but us. But if you want to find them, they're there.
They are facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, Swimming Pool Safety, and we remind you, in the words of comedian Dimitri Martin, swimming is a confusing sport because sometimes you do it for fun and sometimes you do it not to die. And when I'm swimming, sometimes I'm not sure which one it is. This came up because back on May 18th, USA Today and other news outlets reported outbreaks of diarrhea related to cryptosporidiosis. This is a parasite. In pools and water parks increased at least twofold in the past 2 years. Possibly we are better able to identify parasite, and that's why they increase, possibly because there are actually more outbreaks. There were 32 outbreaks in 24 states in 2016, 16 nationwide in 2014, according to this report. This parasite, and let's be graphic here for a moment, cover the children's ears. This parasite spreads when people swallow something that has come into contact with feces from an infected person, such as pool water contaminated with diarrhea. Yes.
Talk about an emergency show. How hard did you search for topics?
Let you think on that. Well, I will say, since I got my medical degree, I have an entirely different view of hotel swimming pools than when I was a child. When I was a child, I couldn't wait to get to the hotel swimming pool.
I had a whole different take on swimming pools. All I had to do was just grow up.
And you stopped going, well, when our kids were young, you know, we made a point of getting in the pool with our kids. We thought that was good swimming, and we'll talk about that.
Now you just know the importance of showering after you get out of the pool.
Yeah, it's true. So we've got for you our Health Matters summer swimming tips, our top 10 summer swimming tips from Health Matters. We've done this particular sponsor before, but just want to remind you, now that the weather is starting to improve, starting to warm up, it is time to think about your summer swimming safety. So first one out of 10. Number one, inspect the pool before you jump in. Check the drains, particularly. If these drains do not have adequate covers, if there are cracked or loose tiles, places where your child might get caught or places where your child might get injured. And so many people, they just say, oh, jump in. They don't even look at the pool to see whether it's a safe thing. You don't know what's in the pool. You don't know how safe that pool is. Take a moment to walk around the pool, check the drains, check the sides of the pool, and make sure it is safe. Number two, and we can't emphasize this enough. This is not, in our mind, emphasized enough in the news media. If your child has long hair, put your child's hair up before they swim. How many times have we seen a girl's hair get caught in a drain, get caught in branches when they're swimming in a creek or a river, and the girl be unable to surface because her hair gets trapped? That loose flowing hair makes wonderful pictures. It is really a hazard for swimming. So put the hair up if your child is going to be swimming. Number three, supervise your children closely, even when the lifeguards are present. My daughter was a lifeguard. She was shocked and astonished at how many parents let their kids swim to the deep end of the pool and the kids went under and the lifeguards had to save them. Supervise your children closely. Keep an eye on them. Keep a charged cell phone by the pool. That way you can make that emergency call without leaving the pool if you have to. And then finally, check for life-saving equipment and know where it is. Number four, and this is a tough one. I'll read number four. This is from the CDC. Their advice is, to visit a pool supply or hardware store, stock up on test strips that can measure the pH and disinfectants in the water. A healthy pool has a pH between 7.2 and 7.8. Let me say it again. A healthy pool has a pH between 7.2 and 7.8. The concentration of chlorine should be at least 1 part per million in regular pool water, 3 parts per million in a hot tub. For bromine, the concentration should be 3 parts per million in the pool, 4 parts per million in the hot tub. Now, here's the problem I've got. Rick, have you ever checked the pH in a pool?
Actually, believe it or not, I have. But we had an above ground pool for a little while, so I did it. But I didn't like it. It was always annoying.
Shelly?
No.
All right. So imagine this. Good. You just ruined the whole show by being actually,
maybe you'll do some homework.
All right, but here's the thing. Imagine you've been driving all day. You finally get to the hotel. You check in. There's this beautiful pool right there. The kids want to go swimming. There's lots of other kids playing and splashing around. You get out your handy-dandy pH meter and your chlorine meter, and you find the pool doesn't meet regulations, your specifications. Or you go to a water park. You pay admission. You get in there. That pool is not adequate. Are you going to pull your kids from the pool? Are you going to go back home? Are you going to tell them to put their clothes back on? So this is a really tough one, but I want you to realize this cryptosporidiosis parasite, one of the problems with it is the feces in the water and whether or not this water is being adequately filtered, adequately cleaned. I believe because it is it has spores, it is, cryptosporidiosis, I don't know that chlorine is going to take care of it. You just got to get kids out of the water with diarrhea. But the question is, if you take your pH meter and your chlorine and your bromine check into the pool, are you going to pull your children out of a pool because it doesn't meet specifications?
If you took that test equipment with you, then yes, you're going to.
You're going to, but it's
otherwise, if you go to the effort of taking that with you, you're going to do it.
Number five, here's the big one. Health officials say people who have had diarrhea should not swim. If you or your child or someone you love has had diarrhea, you should not swim, and then comes the period.
Doesn't that seem self-explanatory?
Yes. Make the young kids take hourly bathroom breaks. You know, if they are not able to control things very well, take an hourly bathroom break. Take them down, sit them down, and make sure. You do not want stool in the water. It's just a bad idea regardless. And we'll stop there at tip number 5 out of 10. We'll get the rest over in the next fractional portion. That is our sponsor, Swimming Pool Safety, and these tips from Health Matters to try to keep you and the children safe this summer. I want to start off, I don't usually do this, but I just want to let you guys know and let our radio fans know that I have received an honor. At the time we're recording this, I am about to go and accept this award. I am the Moorhead Round County Chamber of Commerce 2017-2018, I believe that's the year, Educator of the Year.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. As I said, I don't usually do this. I think the important thing about this is that I'm getting this because of my work at St. Clair, work with medical students and pre-medical students and physician assistant students and other healthcare students. And so this is kind of a branching out for this award. you don't think of I'll just say I have always been impressed with the amount of education that goes on in Morehead and Round County. We have a community technical college here. We have, of course, our high school. We've got Morehead State University. But if you look at St. Clair as a teaching facility, St. Clair takes medical students from two different medical schools. We have physician assistant students, respiratory therapy students, nursing students, nurse practitioner students, certified nurse anesthetist students. Diagnostic imaging students come as well. There are also health administration students. This school, and by the way, they're about to start a physical therapy program there. They're working with Morehead State to make that happen. Our program is working on going from a two-year medical school program where they only do the clinical years to a four-year medical school program as well. Frankly, the amount of education in that hospital and the amount of education in the community is staggering. And I want to accept this award. Obviously, I'm very pleased. I am humbled. I am proud to get this. But also, I am very pleased that a person who works at St. Clair in the healthcare field is able to get an award like this. And I want to salute those other people who are engaged in education. I believe that the only way we're ever going to make a difference in Appalachia, we're going to actually change people's lives, is through education. And for me, this award is a very gratifying, very humbling experience. I will leave it at that. Rick, you got...
Congrats.
Thanks. Appreciate it. You got 2 minutes and a half to talk about the WannaCry ransom attack.
Why would I want to do that?
Impacted 300,000 computers in 150 countries and apparently barely paid back enough money to justify doing it in the first place by the ransomware people. Less than probably around 70,000 in payments as of May 15th, according to the Trump administration. This was a surprisingly low response. I'll just put it that way.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, it was I think good for the industry to experience this and get and let me be careful here. So I think these things come along and we're more prepared than we think, but not as prepared as we hoped. And so I think you get people who do get caught. I think one of the things about the ransomware is where it tends to distribute itself is on your personal stuff, right? The corporate accounts tend to be, in general, more protected than residential or personal accounts. When you tear up your home computer, most people get frustrated. They lose their pictures. They have problems, but they don't pay the ransomware, right? They just can't do it. It's when you hit the superfecta and get, you know, some corporation that's got data that, you know, somehow or another is very important to them, and then they're willing to kind of do that. I think, you know, healthcare is kind of one of the targets, I think, these days. So in that sense, you really thought where the exploits would have been in this case, because the computer, to be exploited, you had to be a really kind of an old computer that wasn't patched, right? Most corporations kind of stay with the times and they patch, maybe not as regular as they should, but they patch more than a home. So again, leads everything to residential. Residential's not where the money is. So it kind of makes sense, don't it?
Yeah, it's in my mind, it's sort of like seeing this big mortar or missile or rocket, and it missed. It sort of went over your head, and that could have been really bad.
Well, I think it's kind of comical, and we probably don't have time to dive into here, but I think it was comical how it was found and fixed, or how this particular variation was found and eliminated. I think it was pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, basically, if you haven't heard, a very alert programmer figured out an off switch.
Yeah, but it was really an easy off switch.
We have an easy off switch, too. We're going to take a break, and you come back with us and listen to our second fraction portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is a second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the emergency show number one.
It's better than the number two show.
Yeah.
I thought this was the number two show.
No, this is number one, but number two should not be done in the swimming pool. Brings us to our sponsor, Swimming Pool Safety, and our Health Matters summer swimming tips. Number one, as we mentioned last time, inspect the pool before you allow your children to go in. Check the drains, check the sides. Make sure that this is a safe pool for your children. Number two, if the your children have long hair, put that long hair up so that they don't get that caught in a drain, in some type of suction device, and they're not able to rise to the surface to breathe. Number three, even when lifeguards are present, it is a good idea to keep a close eye on your children, supervise them closely. Keep a charged cell phone close to the pool so that if you do have to reach emergency responders, you can do that without leaving the area. Look for life-saving equipment when you enter the pool area, poles, rings, things like that. Number four, this is a tough one. CDC says you need pH strips, a way to measure chlorine and bromine in the water. And make sure the pH is between 7.2 and 7.8. Chlorine, 1 part per million in regular water, 3 parts per million in the hot tub. Bromine, 3 parts per million in the regular water, 4 parts per million in the hot tub. Our question is, if you do these checks, are you willing to pull your children and shut down the swimming event because the swimming pool does not make the minimum criteria? Number five, and this is the key thing to shut down the cryptosporidiosis outbreaks, is you can't swim if you have diarrhea. People who have had diarrhea should just not swim. Wait till next week. Make the young kids take hourly breaks, bathroom breaks. Nobody does number two in the pool. Number six, which is a corollary to number five, don't swallow pool water. Remember, if it gets in your eyes, goes up your nose, down the back of your throat, it's pretty much the same thing as swallowing it, and so try to avoid these things. Number seven, protect your head, neck, and spine. Do not dive into unfamiliar waters, feet first the first time. Even if it looks clear, you need to know where that bottom of the pool is. It's best to go in feet first and range find before you dive in head first. Number eight, cannot stress this enough. One of my best friends in high school rendered a paraplegic. Due to this, don't drink and swim. Alcohol and swimming do not mix. Number nine, learn to swim.
Shouldn't that be number one?
I'm kind of with Shelley on this one. I think that should be number one. Well, I mean, this is the number one show.
Yeah. This is really loose association. Well, I think you ought to have a safe swimming pool to go into whether you can swim or not. Frankly, if the drain
is... If you can't swim, none of them are safe.
Well, the ones
unless they're a foot deep.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
That's not a pool, though. That's a puddle.
Number 10. Don't mess with electrical storms. If you can see it, flee it. If you can hear it, clear it. That's according to the National Lightning Safety Institute in Louisville, Colorado. We stress watching the lightning getting closer and closer is not really a good option when you're in the pool. First up for this fractional portion, May 22nd, I got this from the New York Times, but it was originally published online in the journal Pediatrics. The American Academy of Pediatrics has advised parents to avoid 100% fruit juice for babies younger than 6 months. That's right, avoid 100% fruit juice for babies younger than 6 months. They have always urged caution with fruit juice, but this they said, look, let's just ban it entirely from the baby's diet during the first year. The concern is it offers no nutritional benefits early in life. It can take the place of breast milk or formula that the babies really need. They have updated this for the first time since 2001. Got a lot of quotes here from the New York Times from experts who say this is a great idea. It's about time. Whole fruit, less of a pure sugar intake than fruit juice. We want kids to learn how to eat fresh foods. So what you do, you start from either formula or milk. Milk, breast milk is preferred. And then you wean people to eat, wean the babies to eat fruit and other foods, but you don't wean them to basically a sugary fruit juice. Fruit juice is something that seems healthier than it actually is. It looks like, what could go wrong with this?
Well, it depends on where you get the fruit juice, doesn't it? I mean, if you get it like right out of an orange, probably pretty good orange juice,
but you still don't get the fiber and the nutrients from the
there you go
the
getting
pulp.
All technical.
You know, essentially what
you've
done,
all the sugars,
yeah, I understand.
You
squeeze the sugar out of an orange and you drink the sugar,
right?
This is the way I look at it,
the natural sugars.
Yeah, it's natural, which is,
but I mean when you buy it in a juice box, it's got a bunch of other stuff in it.
Yeah, well, that's true. I guess fresh squeezed is a little bit more fructose and less sucrose than sunny delight or those type of things. But on the flip side, you're essentially throwing away the good part of the fruit, and you are sipping on the bad part of the fruit. And so, again, pediatricians, first year, avoid 100% fruit juice for babies younger than 6 months. That's in the past, and currently they have updated it. They said no fruit juice for the first year is what they're recommending. And I believe, as I said, fruit juice is just not what we had hoped it would be. We thought, you remember the juicers? You remember that? You juice everything, so you don't have to actually eat it. You just basically drink it. I think juicing is, I believe, on its way out.
Yeah, it's overrated.
Other recommendations. When a pediatrician deems juice to be medically necessary in infants older than 6 months, it should be given in a cup, not a bottle. For toddlers, 100% juice may be offered as a part of a snack. For children age 4 to 6, consumption should be limited to 6 ounces a day. For 7 to 18, 8 ounces a day. In other words, you just cannot live on fruit juices. For children with chronic diarrhea, abdominal pain, excessive flatulence, and that would be the Rick Phillips bloating, physicians should inquire about juice consumption because it can cause symptoms. And children with poor excessive weight gain, children should recommend cutting all juice from the diet, as it does, again, once again, takes the place of more valuable, more nutritious things. So we have new recommendations for them. And again, it continues that slide. You look at it for the today's generation, they do energy drinks, which contain a little more caffeine than I feel comfortable with, to be honest. I have, I'm still not a Monster or Red Bull guy. Just can't do it.
Me either.
Yeah.
Nope.
And I always, when I see people drinking it, I feel compelled to tell them not to.
Well,
is that wrong?
I had a student come in class and set a Red Bull on her desk, and I just felt like she was using drugs in front of me. And this is me being, an old man. It's perfectly legal, and if you grow up with Red Bull, then fine. Rick, I mean, when I've been to people...
are my age that I'm talking to.
When I've been to meetings that involve programmers, they seem to do a lot of energy drinks, or they have in the past.
They do, and you know, the funny thing is I've always, for some reason in my mind, maybe because of the show, maybe because of some of the research we talked about, but I've always wanted to put Red Bull in the same category as, you know, cigarettes. And I don't know why, but, you know, I think the research is still a little out there. I don't think there's anything conclusive, but, I mean, it's not like coffee where we have a pretty good idea that coffee's not going to kill you.
Yeah. I think fruit juice is on its way down. So, kids are not interested in soda. We have events where we have college kids come in who want to go into medical school, and we'll put out both diet and regular sodas, and we'll just take them back up at the end of the thing. They will drink water, much more likely to drink water than these drinks.
It's bottled water, though, right?
Yeah.
It's not like tap water.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Please. Tap water, honestly.
You drink tap water.
Yeah.
So are they better than you, or are you better than them? Well, what's the deal?
Well, if I have a cup and I've got some ice, then why not drink tap water? I mean, it's water.
Is it?
Yeah. It's not from a glacier in Fiji. I've always wondered how many glaciers there are in Fiji. But it's water. It's okay.
Tony, I hate to break it to you, but I'm not entirely sure there's any glaciers in Fiji. But
I don't know. Maybe I've been misled.
Unless
that was
one
my understanding
broke free
about this water.
And sailed south. I'm going to guess there aren't any.
All I know is what I see on the bottle. And so maybe I'm confused about this, but that was my understanding. But they do
so
like water.
So you clearly don't drink the stuff that says smart on the side of it.
And I will tell you, you know, as you know, I drink green tea. I held my nose. I got myself accustomed to drinking green tea, which is not at all a thing that a kid from rural Kentucky would do. And then I found out the bottled green tea that I drink is probably
useless.
Yeah.
Right.
You got to brew the green tea yourself.
You want some of my diet Pepsi?
No, I'm fine, but thanks anyway. The one thing that puzzles me is that coffee seems to have so many health benefits, but still, we are very slow to embrace coffee. It looks to me like coffee's probably a little better than water. If you can't drink coffee, you should drink water, and everything else you should just avoid altogether.
Everything's better with coffee.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Do you?
I only had one cup today, and I'm hurting. I had one cup around lunchtime, and that was, you know, I needed one more.
My son knows not to talk to me until I've had two cups.
Well, okay. Now, let me rephrase. My one cup is 2 cups in 1 cup, right? I mean, so I end up with 4 cups a day, 2 at a time.
Rick basically carries around a bucket and fills it up with coffee.
It's only like 16, 17 ounces. It's not that much. Twice.
16 ounces. I mean, that is 1 cup of coffee. I mean, you know, the heat generated from that thing.
Now, well, you know, you put the turbine on that.
Yeah.
I needed another one.
Yeah, I understand.
I may fall asleep during this show. Not that you
and
that care.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and exactly how are we going to know? That's the problem. But at any rate, the fruit juices are and I agree with the American Academy of Pediatrics. We do not drink. My wife and I do not drink fruit juices on a regular basis anymore. It just does not seem to be the good part of the fruit. I think you're doing it wrong. It's like eating the watermelon rind instead of eating the good part. Next up, from the Washington Post, this was May 18th, a guy named Christopher Murray at the University of Washington, and we've heard this story. There are times when I just wonder if I should even bring these things on Health Matters because we keep emphasizing them. They looked at 32 causes of death in 195 countries from 1990 to 2015. That's a 25-year period. And they looked at Health Care Quality Index, and they use that for rankings. And these are things like deaths from tuberculosis, deaths from other infectious diseases, deaths from prematurity, and so forth. These are deaths that if you have good medical care, you should be able to avoid these deaths. And I think as soon as we say these things, I think you realize where we're headed. America did not do well in these rankings. We ranked in second tier. We scored an 80 with the top score was in the mid-90s. Bottom of the second decile puts us on par with Estonia and Montenegro and behind virtually every European country and Japan, as well as New Zealand. We're not in the same area. We grumble about these things. They don't always correlate with staying alive, but this does. The top country is a little country called Andorra and the Pyrenees Mountains, population 85,000, economy based on tourism. The lowest, Central African Republic, not a place we recommend you vacation. They have armed groups committing violence against the civilian population. Norway, Australia, Canada all scored well. Sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, Latin America, and the Caribbean scored poorly. And the United States, which, as we all know, spends more money than anybody else on our health care. And I guess this is good in the sense that even though we spend so much money, that points to where we need to go with the future, right? We need to find out a way to spend our money wisely. It's not like we really need to spend more money on health care. It's like we need to figure out how to spend money on health care in order to best maximize the health of our citizens. So, mm-hmm. Once again, we scored low in an international competition on health care. Once again, you've heard it before, we spend way too much money. Here from, this is a blog from Megan Tetlow, who's a physician assistant from Fort Myers, Florida, working in Sheffield, England. As a part of the National Physician Associate Expansion Program, and she's a guest blogger. She did a blog called Changing Healthcare Reflections from Across the Pond. She said, I'm an American physician assistant working for the National Health Service. I write this blog about differences between the U.S. and U.K. health systems. I have avoided political discussions, but the recent passage of the American Health Care Act by the U.S. House of Representatives has me changing my tune. She says, I saw a GoFundMe page from a family in America struggling to cope with a story of a young woman diagnosed with cancer while pregnant. Her spouse faced undergoing chemotherapy for their cancer, caring for a newborn and two other young children, and they can't afford it. They can't pay for it. When British healthcare providers talk to me about healthcare in the U.S., their greatest fear is patients needing healthcare that they won't receive because they can't afford it. And Shelley, we see this pretty much on a daily, weekly
all
basis.
The time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're absolutely correct. I explain private insurance and Medicaid and how many practices treat people regardless of their ability to pay, but the truth is there are millions of families who make too much to qualify for Medicaid but not enough to afford top-tier private insurance. And we see this, these really high deductibles, people struggling to pay out-of-pocket for basic things such as medications for high blood pressure and cancer and things like that. Unfortunately, these will only increase if the American Health Care Act is passed by the Senate because it will roll back some of the protections we have here. This is what they said. This is what she said. And I'm going to just stop on this quote and then let us talk about this a little bit. I also find it intolerable that a health care bill opposed by the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American Nursing Association, and other professional medical organizations could be presented to Congress as a serious plan, let alone be passed by the House. And part of our mistrust of organizations has gotten to the point where we consider all those organizations to be self-serving rather than serving the public. And frankly, the American Medical Association opposed Medicare when it first came out. So we don't have a great track record. And perhaps the reason that they all oppose it is, let's face it, the Affordable Care Act did provide more funding to pay people to take care of other people. But there's a part of me that agrees with her that, who is for the American Health Care Act?
Right, and the people who should be for it aren't. I mean, that should say something. And the people who are voting, our representatives, should be representing the people and these organizations that we supposedly listen to and follow the guidelines when we take care of our patients, and they don't.
Now, I will say the American Healthcare, Affordable Care Act, the so-called Affordable Care Act, is not affordable. That is, we cannot afford to continue to pay unlimited amounts of money for medications for everyone.
So, Tony, when was the last thing anything that had to put affordable in the title was actually affordable?
This is true.
I mean, frankly, they're using marketing techniques and ploys that make us look left when really we should be looking right. I mean, I don't think it's affordable. I think they know it's not affordable. I think everybody knows it's not affordable. I think the problem is nobody knows how to make it affordable.
Well,
if
you look at the state of Kentucky, and I've never been that impressed with politics in the state of Kentucky. We had a Democratic governor who committed us to Medicaid expansion and to the Affordable Care Act. And we had a Republican governor who is committing us to trying to finance Medicaid expansion and the Affordable Care Act by modifying them. And this, ironically, is exactly what I would want to happen. I mean, I understand that the push in the Democratic Party currently is to try to expand government services. I understand that Republicans are concerned about affordability, but if they can find a way to make these services affordable one way or the other, this would be great. I think the idea at this point is, well, let's just roll it back, and into that vacuum we'll rush private organizations, we'll rush charities and so forth. They will fill that void. They were not filling that void before the Affordable Care Act was passed, and in today's climate, we really are very pessimistic they will fill that void now. We are simply about to, our concern is, as Megan Tetlow said in her blog, and as many of these organizations say, we're about to abandon a large portion of our population to basically paying for their own health care as best they can or foregoing it. And we've tried to avoid politics for the past 6 months. Occasionally,
for the past 14 years.
Yeah. I don't want anyone to think that we're looking at this and saying we're fine. In fact, Kentucky, with the largest Medicaid expansion percentage-wise in the nation, stands to lose more than any other state in the country if the Medicaid expansion is rolled back. This is going to affect our health care systems. It's going to affect our economy. It's going to affect our communities, and it's going to affect our Kentuckians. And we join Megan in being shocked and astonished that it's gotten this far. We're sort of astonished we've gotten this far, but we're going to take a break and finish with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is our emergency show number one, so named because we were busy. Rick wasn't busy, but the rest of us were busy.
Huh?
And
what?
Yeah. And so we didn't come up with a name with it, so we call it the Emergency Show Number 1. Our sponsor for the final time, the Health Matters Summer Swimming Tips. That's right, our top 10 summer swimming tips. Number 1, learn how to swim. Boy, are you happy?
Yes, thank
nice
you.
Nice change.
Okay, now I've got to remember what number 9 is, but never mind. Number 2, inspect the pool before you go in, even though you know how to swim, apparently, from number 1. Check the drains, check the tiles, make sure it is safe for your child to be in the pool. Number 3, I guess we're calling it now, put your child's hair up. If your child has long hair, that is a hazard underwater. It can get caught in drains, in loose tiles, in other places, and your child cannot rise to the surface. Your child drowns in something as shallow as a hot tub because their hair is caught in the drain. Please don't let that happen. Number 4, supervise your children closely, even when lifeguards are present. Keep a cell phone charged and by the pool. This is an essential part. You're going to take sunblock if you're outdoors. You may take life vests. Take a cell phone and make sure you do not have to run off if something bad happens to your child. Look for the life-saving equipment, poles, rings, things like that. Make sure you know where they are. Number 5, CDC's advice. Measure the pH, measure the chlorine or bromine in the pool water, and do not swim. If the pH is not between 7.2 and 7.8, do not swim. If the chlorine is not at least 1 part per million in regular pool water, do not swim. If the bromine is not 3 parts per million in regular pool water, and good luck with telling your kids to go back to their hotel room because of that. But I see what they're saying. You've got to understand whether or not this pool is maintained. You can't assume just because it has clear water that it's maintained.
What about if you know there's a lot of chlorine in it?
Well, again, a good point.
I mean, because I've heard people say that before in my lifetime, going, well, there's so much chlorine in here, I'm sure it'll kill anything that's in here.
Well, first of all, for certain spore-forming organisms, I don't know what an organism is.
We'll get that on the number 2 show.
For certain spore-forming organisms, it's not about chemically treating them. They form spores, which spores are basically, they wall themselves off. You cannot kill them with chemicals. In that case, simply saturating the area with chlorine will not necessarily take care of all infectious processes. And that's why we talk about number 6. People who have had diarrhea shouldn't swim. Make the kids take hourly bathroom breaks. It is critical to keep that water clean, and chlorine will not undo what happens when you do.
You're on your own on that one, buddy.
Moment of silence.
We've been friends a long time.
I was pretty darn proud of that. Can I just say that? Number 7, don't swallow the pool water because...
Number 6 is pretty bad.
Number 6... which we will now rechristen. Someone did number 2 with number 6, and so number 7 is don't swallow the pool water. But if it gets in your eyes, goes up your nose, down the back of your throat, realize you have swallowed,
now,
in fact, the pool water. Number 8, we're going to confuse everybody with this. Protect your head, neck, and spine. Don't dive into unfamiliar waters. Feet first time. Every time you go somewhere. And again, if you have a nice swimming hole in the lake or along the river, realize that a log could have rolled in to that area. It could change. The surface could change with a heavy rain. Do not assume because it was safe last time, it'll be safe this time. Number 9, don't drink alcohol in swimming. Don't mix. And number 10, don't mess with electrical storms. Don't watch them from the pool's edge. Don't wait till the lightning gets close. Don't count from the flash bang. Just simply, if you can see it, flee it. If you can hear it, clear it. Don't wait for yourself to be electrocuted by that surprise lightning strike. That is our sponsor, Swimming Safety. Please be safe with you and your children this summer. We are talking about sugar-sweetened beverage consumption. This was in the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. A person unfortunately named Marissa Burgermaster. They looked at adults who drank more than 4 sugar-sweetened beverages every day and compared those to people who drank 0 beverages per day in New York City. And they looked to try to figure out what happens in people who drink 4-plus drinks a day. They looked at public health policies and programs to try to figure out what they could change about drinking sodas. 2009 New York City Community Health Survey, they had about 10,000 people in that. They looked at their body mass index. And here's what they said. If you looked, just compared those that drank 4 drinks a day to those who consumed none, they had a higher BMI. They were heavier. The BMI difference was measurable, substantial, significantly higher. However, if they used something called propensity matching, there was no difference in their body mass index. So drinking 4 unsweetened beverages per day, according to this propensity match study, does not change your BMI. Now, let me tell you about propensity match. What you're doing, all of these are observational studies. Some people are going to drink 4 drinks a day. Some people are not. You try to match them so that every characteristic you can think of is the same, except one of them drinks 4 drinks a day, the other one drinks 0. And the theory is, this is the statistical theory, if I can match every single item, it's almost as if I randomized 2 identical people. One of them gets to drink 4 drinks a day and the other one doesn't. So even though I can't do what we call a randomized trial, which is what we really want to do, I can't tell people to drink soft drinks or not to drink soft drinks. I have to just watch the ones that do. If I can match every characteristic between them other than the soft drinks, it's good. Now, here's the problem with it. You can never match every other characteristic because there is something that makes that one person drink 4 drinks. So you match everything except that one thing. That would be the best propensity-matched study you can do. But it's always the stuff you don't think of that causes you trouble. We've seen that time and time again, say with the artificial sweetened beverages. Why do people drink artificial sweetened beverages? Most of them feel they need to lose weight. So we are looking at people who, for some reason, whether it's an illness or whether it's personal appearance or whatever, decide they want to lose weight. And they are different because of those illnesses than people who don't drink artificial sweetened beverages. And the same way with this, then, I have a suspicion that drinking sugar-sweetened beverages causes weight gain. They say, well, if we match them on everything we can think of, it doesn't. I just think that they are probably missing something because some of these people are drinking 4 drinks a day and others aren't. Now, the one thing that I got out of this, and I sort of liked it, I'm going to read this section from the Journal of Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Many health promotion efforts have focused on targeting and changing a single health behavior, such as fast food, sugar-sweetened beverages, or fruit and vegetable intake. Our research and other studies suggest that taking a whole diet approach may be more appropriate to address the complexities of obesity. For example, fast food consumption has been associated with a poor quality diet in overweight and obese women. It's also been associated with other poor dietary patterns, such as low intake of dairy, high intake of sugar-sweetened beverages. If you go to a fast food place, you're going to get a soft drink. The fast food consumption by itself is only one of this one part of this entire pattern. These findings suggest that sugar-sweetened beverage reduction efforts may be necessary but not sufficient to reduce obesity rates. Now, there's two ways you can look at this. You know, one of them is, well, then let's not focus on this. We need to focus more globally. And if you're the soft drink industry, you love that.
Right.
You'd say, yeah, exactly right. It should be a part of an overall global effort to reduce caloric intake rather than singled out. And the rest of us say, look, we can't focus on everything. We can't tax everything proportionally. But we can sure tax those sugar-sweetened beverages. And it works. It reduces consumption. We think that that's going to reduce weight. That, I don't believe, has been proved. Right now, we know we can reduce consumption with a tax. We don't know about weight reduction and diabetes reduction and things like that. It's going to take years. Mm-hmm. So I read about that. I looked at propensity matching because that's really in vogue right now. You can see how it would be nice if we didn't have to start off and watch people for 15 years. We could just come in at year 15 and try to propensity match. It would make science a lot cheaper and a lot easier. I just think that you can't match every characteristic except one because characteristics are just too linked. Mm-hmm. Next up, from Portugal, 2 studies at the European Congress on Obesity in 2017 sponsored a symposium sponsored by the International Sweeteners Association.
Nice.
That's right. The European Congress on Obesity is sponsored by the International Sweeteners Association.
Now, good customers.
Okay. Well, you know, let's face it. As government pulls money out of scientific research, where's the money going to come from? Well, the International Sweeteners are obviously glad to do this. And I'm not saying that you have to automatically throw it out, but you have to be a bit skeptical when you're in a symposium sponsored by them. But these I won't even try to pronounce the place where this guy works. It is in France. His name is Marc Fantino. He presented a randomized study. He actually had people, half the people drink a diet drink and kept their caloric intake the same and compared those to people who drank water. You know, the theory is that if you drink a diet drink, you get craving for sweet stuff and you compensate. He said, all right, well, we're going to randomize people to a diet drink or water. And what he found, preliminary data, said the diet drinks help control sugar cravings better than water. So if you're sitting there on a restricted calorie diet plus water, you're miserable. If you're sitting there on a restricted calorie diet and you drink a sugar-free soft drink, you at least think that you're not as miserable. Okay. All the evidence for harm is from animal or these observational studies. Said Richard Black from West Harrison, New York, when you do a tightly controlled interventional study of diet drinks, the findings are neutral or beneficial. Diet soft drinks do not lead to a healthier diet, but they can help you minimize or avoid consumption of unhealthy products. Our preferred standard drink is always water, but maybe diet soft drinks aren't as bad as we think. This, again, a study, and the science is not bad, but reported at the Congress on obesity, sponsored by International Sweeteners Association.
Oh.
Well, what do you do with that? I mean, I have really struggled with what we do with sugar-free beverages. I don't know. 80 women, 86 men were in the study. 4 weeks, beverages with low-calorie sweetener or water. Reported in the international, there was another study in the International Journal of Obesity, had the same thing, and found the same thing. We think possibly artificial sweeteners may alter the germs in your gut. That was a paper in Nature, they pointed out, and again, this is an apology for the artificial sweetener industry. They looked at aspartame, saccharin. They only investigated saccharin in humans, and they investigated it at an equivalent of 45 tabletop sweeteners when they decided that artificial sweeteners changed the germs that are in your gut. So I will tell you, once again, as with most dietary nutrition science, I have a hard time finding truth here. I don't know.
I agree. I don't know either.
It's tough. I mean, you know, and this is coming from, you know, each one of us has a drink. Some of them sweetened, some of them not, some of them artificially. So we are very representative of the industry right now. And it's hard to say. And then our producers are the worst of the worst.
If you're not from our region and you don't know what Aolate is, it's a locally produced soft drink. Not necessarily the worst.
Well,
the worst,
I don't mean flavor wise. I'm just saying it's always kind of there's a kind of a rumor that runs around about its caffeine levels, which
is not true. By
not
the way.
True. Yeah, they're not true. But it's got to have plenty of sugar in it. There's no question there. But no, the whole thing is just tough. I mean, I drink diet drinks all day. I mean, I probably drink 2 a day, realistically speaking. And the other thing, too, Tony, one thing you didn't really talk about in the numbers of drinks was the size of an average drink. I mean, you say 4 a day. Is that 4 12-ouncers? Is that, I mean, because, you know, really, if you're going to do a drink, you might as well do 16.9 or 24 or 20 or, you know, why stop at 12, right? So, I don't know. Is you know, 48 ounces a day? I mean, if me drinking
two
drinks. Do
you want to know why I didn't tell you how many ounces?
Because you don't know.
No. Well, yeah, fair enough. But this, keep in mind, this was the European Congress.
So it was in liters.
It was in milliliters.
You don't have the conversion in your mind.
I can't convert milliliters to
ounces. There is this thing, Tony, it's called the internet.
500 milliliters is 16.9 ounces.
Woo!
Okay, all right. So 660, so what we're looking at is basically an 18-ounce soft drink 4 a day.
Right. So in America, those are hard to buy. Most of them are either 16.9 or 20.
Okay.
Right, so depending on the size you get, if it's kind of, you know, bigger around, it's going to be a 20. If it's slimmer, it's going to be a 16.9, and then there is the 24s. And if you get a fountain drink, that's a big gulp.
The big gulp, yeah.
I'm going to let this one die on the
right,
mind.
Right, let's get off the air as quickly as possible.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Sean Delaney and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or just visit us on Facebook. Do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
Health Matters is a prescription radio show used to treat a kind of skin cancer called melanoma. It may be used when your melanoma has spread or cannot be removed by surgery.
It is also used to treat a kind of lung cancer called non-small cell lung cancer. Health Matters may be used when your lung cancer has spread and tests positive for PD-L1, or your tumor does not have an abnormal EGFR or ALK gene. It may also be used for advanced non-small cell lung cancer if you have tried chemotherapy that contains platinum and it did not work, or is no longer working, or your lung cancer tests positive for PD-L1, or if your tumor has an abnormal EGFR or ALK gene and you have also received an EGFR or ALK inhibitor medicine that did not work or is no longer working.
I'm glad you did that part. Health Matters is also used to treat a kind of cancer called classical Hodgkin's lymphoma. Health Matters may be used for classical Hodgkin's lymphoma in adults and children when you have tried listening to another show and it did not work, or when your cancer has returned after you receive three or more types of treatment.
Side effects of Health Matters include intestinal problems that can lead to tears and holes in your intestine. Signs and symptoms may include diarrhea, more bowel movements than usual, stools that are black, tarry, sticky, or have blood or mucus, and should not be in a swimming pool under any circumstances, or severe stomach area pain or tenderness.
You may also notice kidney problems, including kidney failure. Oops. Signs of kidney problems may include change in the amount or color of your urine.
Whatever you do not take Health Matters lying down. Get up this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.